Members 115 having arrived. I'm going to call the March 23rd, 2021 meeting of the Taxes Committee to order under rules 10.01, which allows for remote hearings. Members, we can go until 2:45 today, so we're going to have a full 90 minutes of our committee. So with that, Ms. Griska, if you would please call the roll.
Marquardt.
Present.
Marquardt, present. Liz Lagarde.
Present.
Liz Lagarde, present. David. David.
David's present.
David's present. Abaje.
Present.
Abaje, present. Carlson.
Carlson, present.
Carlson, present. Detmer.
Detmer, present.
Detmer, present. Garofalo.
Garofalo, present.
Garofalo, present. Gomez. Gomez. Her.
Present.
Her, present. Hertas.
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Howard. Howard. McDonald.
McDonald, present.
McDonald, present. Miller.
Miller, present.
Miller, present. Mortensen.
Present.
Mortensen, present. Robbins. Robbins. Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Schultz.
Present.
Schultz, present. Stevenson.
Present.
Stevenson, present. Swedzinski.
Present.
Swedzinski, present. Joachim.
Present.
Joachim, present. Gomez.
Present.
Gomez, present. Howard. Robbins. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Griska. We do have a quorum. With that, Representative Liz Lagarde, would you care to move the March 18th, 2021 minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liz Lagarde moves approval of the March 18th, 2021 minutes. Members, any comments, questions? Representative, okay, no. All right, seeing none, I'm going to ask you to unmute yourselves temporarily as we take the vote on the March 18th, 2021 minutes. All those in favor say aye.
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 All say nay. The motion does prevail. The March 18th, 2021 minutes of the Tax Committee are approved. Members, we have one bill, House File 1335, and Representative Herr, welcome to your committee. Would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Chair Marquardt. I'd like to move my bill. I ask that it be laid over for possible inclusion in the Tax Committee Omnibus Bill.
Very good. Representative Hurd, thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and committee members for hearing House File 1335. This bill modifies the tax brackets and increases the state income tax rate by 2.60% on the top income earners in Minnesota. It establishes a fifth tier for Minnesota's individual income tax. The new rate would be 12.45% and would apply to Minnesota's taxable income in excess of $500,000 for married taxpayers filing joint returns and surviving spouses, $250,000 for single taxpayers and married taxpayers filing separate returns, or $400,000 for head of household taxpayers. This tax increase would reset the combined federal and state rate in Minnesota to what it was prior to the enactment of the Trump tax cut in 2017. To provide some perspective, the top 1% of income earners in Minnesota pay a lower effective rate than the state average as a whole. Asking this group of earners to pay more, I believe, is a reasonable ask. To help illustrate the impact of this bill, I want us to consider that a family earning $575,000 of gross income would pay less than $500 in new taxes, while a family making $750,000 would pay around $4,500. In these instances, the family's total effective rate would increase by 0.08%. That's 0.08%, or 8 basis points, and 0.61%, or 0.6%, respectively. After all federal and state taxes, the family making $575,000 would take home $368,580 instead of $369,035. And the family making $750,000 would take home $458,575 instead of $463,125. Raising revenues at this juncture in time is critical. We know that the pandemic did not impact all Minnesotans proportionately. Those in the top earning brackets fared much better than those at the bottom brackets. Recessions usually lessen inequality, but this recession is truly unique. It has increased inequality. In a Washington Post article, while the nation overall has regained nearly half of the jobs lost, several key demographic groups have recovered more slowly, including mothers of school-aged children, African-Americans, Hispanic men, Asian-Americans, younger Americans ages 25 through 34, and people without college degrees. Reflected is the disproportionate deaths impacting these racial and economic communities and loss of jobs in service sectors, which are low paying and held primarily by women and people of color. Some may say that with the surplus, we don't need to raise taxes. And I wish that that were the case. Much of the support is one-time funding. We need to position ourselves for long-term success that requires a steady revenue stream. This will allow us to minimize budget cuts to critical programs and invest in efforts that will continue to allow our residents to thrive. Mr. Chair, I have four testifiers here today to share their stories to illustrate my point. The first is Ms. Teresa Dolata. And so with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers today.
So, well, thank you very much, Representative Herr. And I'm going to make one slight change because there's a time constraint on one of your testifiers. So I'm going to move that around. But members, here's what I'll do. I'm going to allow, since we only have the one bill, 3 to 4 minutes on testimony. And also, members, if you wish, we can ask questions after each testifier. And then, of course, after all the testifiers, comments, questions for the author. So at this time, I'm going to first call Jennifer Hernandez first, and then Teresa Dolata would be next. So Ms. Hernandez, welcome to the committee. And please state your name and provide your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Marquardt and committee members. My name is Jennifer Hernandez, and I have been a middle school teacher working with English learners in Robbinsdale area schools for over 20 years. This year, it has been more challenging than ever to provide the level of support that our students need and deserve. But to be honest, many of the challenges we're facing this year are not new. The inequities that have existed for far too long in our public schools have simply been put under a spotlight during the pandemic. Students need support in order to accelerate their learning. As an EL teacher, I've been fortunate to often teach smaller groups of students, but I've also been in classrooms with 30 to 35 kids, which is more typical in my building. I know the difference class size makes. Smaller class sizes allow teachers to really get to know their students, to personalize their instruction, to figure out which strategies work for each individual. In larger classrooms, teachers are often putting out fires. There's rarely time to get to all of the students who are raising their hands and asking for help, much less the quieter students who are often the ones who need the help even more. Teachers know how to meet students where they're at and move them forward. That's what we do. But we need time with our students. We need time not only to work on academics, but also time to interact and communicate authentically with one another after so much time apart. For years, elected officials have tried to find solutions to helping kids and closing this so-called achievement gap. And most of those solutions come through policy ideas. We feel like we're being told to just be a better teacher, just test more, or whatever the fashion is this year. But for years, teachers have been asking legislators to help us with funding, smaller class sizes, more social and emotional help, trauma responsive schools, wraparound services, universal pre-K, you know, the list goes on. I encourage all of you to go ask teachers in your districts, what do your students need? Because teachers know. In my mind, this bill is clear. We can tax the wealthiest people in our state in order to be able to help fund schools and childcare. Or we can protect the richest Minnesotans and not help kids in the way that they need. This bill is important. It will show your commitment to improving schools, not through unfunded mandates, but by funding what our students need at a time when they need it the most.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hernandez. Are there any questions from members? Very good.
Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry, Representative Swazinski.
Yes, what school district did the testifier come from?
Robbinsdale Area Schools.
What do you receive in total funding per student?
Ms. Hernandez, are you aware of how much you receive per student in Robbinsdale?
I don't have that information in front of me, no.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You bet. Thanks, Representative Swazinski. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Representative Herr, who would you like to call next?
Mr. Chair, it can be the order that was previously provided. So if we could go to Ms. Teresa Dolata and then to Ms. Nicole Pierce-Riswold, and then the last person would be Mr. Eric Harris Bernstein.
Okay, let's do that. So very good. So Ms. Dolata, if you would please state your name and welcome to the committee.
Thanks for having me. My name is Teresa Dolata. I'm a leader with Isaiah, and I live in Minneapolis. I'm permanently disabled, and I work part-time pet sitting, though the work has been irregular because of the pandemic. I have an income of $19,000 a year, most of which goes to pay for my market-rate apartment. I'm on a wait list for a Section 8 voucher for 9 more years. I was afraid of getting priced out of my apartment, so I had to set up a GoFundMe page to keep my housing and to pay for my basic needs. I had been housing insecure in the past and was also homeless 8 times, often when I was working 2 full-time jobs, which were not living wage. I don't understand why very wealthy people aren't paying taxes at the same levels they did in 1987. Minnesota has more rich taxpayers now than they ever before, and our economy has flourished for the top earners since the Dayton tax increases. The fact that tax flight has been used as an excuse to not raise taxes on the very wealthy seems like a poor one and treats those struggling to make ends meet unfairly. This makes me angry. House File 1335 would help address our housing crisis that's affecting our Minnesotan neighbors, Black and white, Latino and Asian, Native and newcomer. We could raise billions in new revenue from those who can afford it and whose fortunes improved during the pandemic to make sure no one worries about where they are going to sleep at night. There are enough resources to make our lives and future vibrant in Minnesota. Let's pass House File 1335. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dolata. Thank you. Any questions from members? Seeing none, next would be Nicole Pierce-Riswold. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name. Begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Nicole Pierce-Riswold. I'm a middle school counselor at Bachman Middle School in Farmington, Minnesota. We are a middle school of 925 students, 6th through 8th grade. Thank you so much for the space today to tell my story of being a school counselor in Minnesota. The main point I want to leave you with today is that we need help. Our Minnesota schools need your help. I have been a school counselor for 10 years. My calendar is packed with complicated needs that impact students' mental well-being. I have students I'm meeting at the curb in the mornings to get them into the building. I am helping students get through panic attacks, breathing with them before presentations, developing individualized coping plans, and working with teachers to support students' mental health needs. More than ever, we have students who have experienced trauma and they don't have the tools to work with that trauma. We have students needing help with depression, anxiety, eating disorders, chemical health, domestic violence, LGBTQIA, suicidal ideation, grief and loss, and the list goes on. In Farmington, we run small group counseling sessions. One of the groups we offer is anxiety support. Last year, we ran over 19 separate groups with anxiety with at least 6 students per group. That is over 120 students seeking help with anxiety. If we included all students seeking support through groups, we had over 20% of our population in small group counseling. That's 1 in 5 kids seeking out help. In the past, on average, kids were waiting 4 days to get an appointment with me. This was unacceptable. Thankfully, my district was able to add half-time positions of counselors in a few buildings. That helped lower my caseload to under 400 and decrease my wait time to 2 days, but that's still unacceptable. The American School Counseling Association recommends student-to-counselor-student ratio of 250-1. Minnesota's average that year was 654-1, making us the third worst state in the nation. Students across the state are in desperate need of more mental health supports. And when you help their student mental health, you help their learning. Extensive research has shown dramatic benefits when students have access to comprehensive school counseling programs, including decreased disciplinary actions, increased rates of graduation and post-secondary enrollment, and college preparedness. I ask that you hear my voice as a collective voice that represents my colleagues in the state of Minnesota. We must increase the taxes for those who can afford it and fund our schools. No more just inflationary increases, no more mandates and small ideas. Invest in schools and students like it was your own kid who needed mental health supports. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pierce-Risvold. Appreciate that testimony. Any questions? If not, Representative Herr, I'm going to continue just kind of down the list as we had, so members might be ready there. So next we have Martha Najolamo. I really apologize on that, but you would be next. From Center for the American Experiment. There you are. All right. Thank you very much. I'm sorry. I know I mispronounced your name. If you would please state your name and begin your testimony. Welcome.
Yeah, no, I get that a lot. thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Martha Njolomoli. I am an economist at the Center of the American Experiment, and I am testifying here today against this proposal for the following reasons. First of all, Minnesota is already a high-tech tax state. Our top marginal individual income tax rate of 9.85% is currently the fifth highest in the nation. Creating a fifth tier of 12.45% will give Minnesota the second highest top marginal individual income tax rate, second only to California. Not only that, but incomes between $250,000 and $1 million for single filers in Minnesota will face the country's top highest marginal individual income tax rate. This is because incomes in that range are taxed at much lower rates in California and all the other states than what this bill is proposing. In California, actually, the top rate kicks in at of 13.3% kicks in only at incomes over $1 million. So whether we like it or not, Minnesota needs to compete with other states for workers as well as investments. The IRS data shows that between 2011 and 2018, Minnesota has actually seen a net significant outflow of individuals earning $50,000 or more. And these losses were even higher for individuals earning over $100,000. With even higher taxes, we are likely to see an accelerated trend of outflow immigration of our high-income workers. And with increased remote work, fewer obstacles now actually exist for individuals who are willing to move out of Minnesota. And we're losing more of our high-skilled workers. What we will have here in the state is reduced investment in our economy, and we're going to have lower productivity among our workers, which in the long term means reduced growth. And think of all the high-skilled workers that will be discouraged of moving to Minnesota when we have all these higher taxes. Just about 2 weeks ago, Target announced that it was downsizing its office due to less need for space. This should tell us how much easier it is post-COVID for workers and businesses to move or work remotely. So if workers can stay in other low-cost, low-tax states and still be able to earn income from Minnesota, why would they need to stay here with our high taxes? And I do realize most of the arguments regarding tax increases argued for the fact that the rich here do not pay as much taxes as lower income individuals. But what the Minnesota Department of Revenue data shows that that is simply not true. In 2016, actually, our top 10% earners earned 43% of Minnesota's income, but they paid 59% of our high income taxes. Additionally, research clearly shows that high taxes are actually bad for economic growth, and income taxes are actually even more harmful. Income taxes are distortional. They discourage people from working and investing. In 2012, the Tax Foundation had summarized 26 papers that analyzed how taxes affect income growth. Out of those 26 papers, 23 showed that high taxes are bad for income growth, and 3 showed mixed results. None of those papers showed that high taxes are good for economic growth. And when we look at studies that actually analyze individual tax structures, what we find is that raising taxes when they're already high has an even more dramatic effect on income growth. And some other papers actually show that progressive taxes, and when taxes are used to fund general expenditure or transfer payments, have an even more negative impact on income growth. Lastly, and more importantly, higher taxes are not actually associated with higher tax revenues. I know we're raising taxes to increase our revenue, but research that we've done here at the center actually shows that higher tax revenues are more a direct function of our GDP. When we grow Minnesota's GDP, our revenues increase. You know, when our GDP declines, our tax revenues actually also decline. We can see this when we look at Governor Dayton's tax hikes in 2013. When they were enacted, in the years that followed, the proportion of income paid by the rich did not actually go up. And even if we go back further in history, Minnesota's tax revenue as a proportion of GDP has actually remained constant in terms of either high or low income taxes. So when we look at the research, the matter of the fact is that we are not going to raise more revenue by taxing the rich. What will actually happen is that we'll only manage to stifle Minnesota's economy. Thank you for your time. And if you have any questions, I'll go ahead and answer them now.
Ms. Jolie Molly, thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? Seeing none, we'll move to, thank you. We'll move to Jill Larson. Ms. Larson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Jill Larson. I'm with the Minnesota Business Partnership. Thanks for the opportunity to provide some comments. We are opposed to this bill. This bill raises $1.7 billion over the next 2 years. And as was mentioned previously, it would essentially give Minnesota the highest income tax bracket, because when you factor in the California rate, it's higher, but starts at a much higher income level, we effectively have the highest rate in the country. As I've mentioned to the committee before, this high rate is already making it difficult to recruit talent to Minnesota. It puts businesses that are passed through entities at a distinct competitive disadvantage. But there's two relatively newer issues that really exacerbate this problem. One, as I've mentioned before, is the federal TCJA law that limited the state and local tax deduction. And that makes state income tax rates even more relevant as we compete with other states as a place for retaining and attracting high wage workers. For an itemizer in the top federal tax bracket, that self-deduction cap effectively raised the tax price of state taxes by 60%. The other issue that is relatively new, and we are seeing it, we are seeing this happen frequently and expect to see it more, is that businesses and jobs have become highly mobile. And the COVID pandemic has significantly accelerated the trend toward working remotely, and people can work from virtually anywhere, and they are moving. And we have examples of this that I hear from our companies all the time. So I want to just respond to this issue of people paying their fair share. As was mentioned earlier, the Department of Revenue's tax incidence study, the top 5% of taxpayers pay about 47% of the income tax at the federal level. It's similar. The top 1% paid, I think, 40%. And we have a highly, highly progressive tax system already. We know our income tax, and you combine it with the estate tax and the property tax refund, they essentially cancel out any regressivity of other individual taxes. The reason why we still have a slightly regressive tax system overall is because of business taxes, ironically. A study that the Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence did, and I think Mr. Haven may go into some more in depth on this, but this is from 2016 data, the latest I have, but they ranked income tax burdens by state. And a married joint filer at $500,000 of income ranked second highest in the country, and their net tax was 143% of the US average. At $1 million of income, it was 152% of the US average. And although this proposal, gives us concern that it will be an incentive for higher income Minnesotans and businesses to leave Minnesota, I think equally important is the disincentive it will create for people to come here, for us to recruit talent and recruit investment, recruit entrepreneurs, venture capital. And it just sends the wrong signal to people that are watching about that may be thinking about coming to Minnesota. It's a very volatile tax, as we know. And so I think increasing the reliance on this kind of a volatile tax is not good for budget stability. We have a budget surplus. We have a robust budget reserve. We have billions of dollars coming in from the federal government. And we think that this tax increase is not only not competitive, but not necessary. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Ms. Larson. Any questions? Representative Herr.
Chair Marquardt, not really a question, but I did just want to clarify that Ms. Larson mentioned that testifiers brought up the term fair share. And I just want to be very clear that as far as I was listening, I did not hear anyone bring up the term paying their fair share. I think that what people are asking is for those doing better to actually pay more into the system. And so I just want to be careful about that term because we know that that has become extremely politicized. So I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments for Ms. Larson? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, Beth Cadoon. Ms. Cadoon, welcome to the committee. Please say your name and begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am Beth Cadoon, representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, an organization of 6,300 businesses across the state of Minnesota that employ over 500,000 Minnesotans. The vast majority of our members are small and mid-sized businesses. We are in strong opposition to Representative Herr's bill. This bill will greatly increase taxes in Minnesota on many private sector employers, undermine competitiveness, hinder talent recruitment and retention, and investment in Minnesota. Over 90% of businesses are pass-through entities, employing the majority of the private sector jobs. This bill will result in very large tax hits on these many private sector employers, as the vast majority of businesses pay their income taxes through the individual income tax code. This new tax of 12.45% will result in less money available for private sector investment. Pass-through income can be taxed even if it's not distributed to the owners or shareholders. This phantom income is recognized for income tax purposes even when the income is reinvested in the business. This will take much needed cash out of the private sector that is even more critical during the uncertainty caused by the pandemic, and this cash is needed to enable businesses to upgrade their facilities, to pay and hire employees, and to grow their businesses. This will greatly undermine Minnesota's competitiveness. As was stated, we'd have the highest rate in the nation at some income levels, and overall, our top rate would be second highest behind California, which their top rate starts at a much higher income level. Our taxes would be much greater than all of our neighboring states. And even in higher tax states like California, we would surpass California with not only this higher income tax at some levels, but realize where our corporate tax rate is higher than California. And California does not have an estate tax. So truly, Minnesota would be an extreme tax outlier. This isn't just a small tax increase of 2%. This amounts to more like a 25% increase for many taxpayers. Studies have been found, which was mentioned regarding the economic detriment of these high tax rates. I'll just mention one regarding entrepreneurship, where a study found that a 5% point increase in the marginal tax rate reduced both the proportion of entrepreneurs willing to invest in physical capital and the mean investment in capital by 10%. Minnesota's tax burdens are already cited as a concern and impediment to growth by our members in the business community. State income tax rates are even more relevant and impactful in today's world of increased mobility, increased telecommuting, increased global competition, and that 2017 federal tax law that capped the state and local tax deduction. We urge you to oppose this tax increase that will undermine private sector growth that is needed for our state's economic success. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Any questions for Ms. Cadoon? Seeing none, move to the next testifier, Mark Haveman. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, my name is Mark Haveman. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence. We are a member-supported research and education organization supporting sound tax policy and fiscally responsible government. A couple of earlier testifiers referenced our National Individual Income Tax Comparison Study, in which we calculate tax burdens and effective tax rates for different filer types at different income levels in every state that has a state income tax. I'd like to share with you an under-the-hood finding, so to speak, from our most recent study that we believe has implications not just for this particular bill, but for any policy discussion concerning the top rates in our state income tax system. So for some very brief background, to do our modeling of tax returns, the Minnesota Department of Revenue provides us with profiles for each combination of filing type and income level that we include in the study. The data comes from the database prepared for use in the department's tax incidence study. These taxpayer profiles include details on wage income, taxable dividends, other taxable income, taxable pensions, Social Security income, property taxes paid, other non-taxable income, and itemized deductions, essentially everything that goes into a tax return. The department creates these profiles for us by taking data from all filers within a narrow range around each income level that we study and calculates the median values for all these different data fields. So it's useful to sort of think of the result as a proxy for the median taxpayer at each of these income and filer type levels. In our most recent 2019 study, which by the way, we will be updating this year and hopefully we get it done before session is completed. For the married joint filer with two dependents at the $1 million of household income level, wage income represents 89% of total household income. At the 500,000 income level, wage income represents 93% of household income. And so for the median taxpayer at these high income levels, wages, not capital gains or dividends or pass-through business income, comprises the vast majority of household income. Now, we think there are a couple of implications of this finding that are worth considering with respect to our marginal tax rates and that have already been touched on, but I think are worth touching on again. The first concerns rate changes in the context of our federal tax system. Since, as was already been said, the passage of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which places a $10,000 limit on state and local tax deductions, makes state income taxes much more economically relevant for high-income earners who itemize. And as was stated, for an itemizer in the top federal tax bracket, the deduction cap raised the tax price of state taxes, that is how much they reduced after-tax income, by almost 60%. Another bill before this committee would allow high-income earners with pass-through income the opportunity to work around this deduction cap by paying state income tax at the entity level. But it's important to realize this does not help high-end wage earners. Our findings suggest that enactment of that bill will not be a panacea that many may hope it is for mitigating high-income earner tax price concerns and tax price shock. More importantly, the deductibility cap has a potentially significant influence on the economics of companies choosing where to locate high-end salaried, managerial, and technical talent and their efforts to attract these individuals. These are the taxpayers we want here in the state of Minnesota. The companies face the prospect of having to pay higher wage premiums than they may now pay to offer the same after-tax income or save money by locating them elsewhere. And raising our top rates to levels at or above the highest level of the nations will just exacerbate all this. Tax debates tend to spend a lot of time and energy debating on whether or not people leave, when the focus might be better spent considering the other side of the road, who, what is or isn't coming. That's even more difficult to assess, for proposals like this bill absolutely need to be evaluated with that in mind. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Haveman, I always appreciate your analysis of our tax system very much. Any questions? Very good. Thank you. We have one final testifier, Eric Bernstein. Mr. Bernstein. Oh, there you are. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Okay. Chairman Marquardt, members of the committee, my name is Eric Bernstein, and I am the policy director for We Make Minnesota, which is a pro-revenue coalition of labor and community groups from across the state. I am very pleased to join you today to share my support for HF 1335, which would add a fifth-tier bracket of 12.45% to Minnesota's personal income tax. The new bracket would apply to taxable income exceeding $500,000 for joint filers or $250,000 for single filers. The estimated $1.65 billion in new sustained revenue would help close our state's large and rapidly compounding funding gaps in everything from education to infrastructure, and would help make up for total tax rates that have declined since the 1990s. The new revenue would allow Minnesota to reinvest in a brighter and more equitable future for all Minnesotans. The tax increase would impact only earners around the top 2% of the income distribution, and the vast majority of its revenue would come from earners well within the top 1%. Others today have shared compelling cases for the necessity of this revenue to support those whose communities and professions have fallen victim to chronic underfunding. Rather than add more examples of Minnesota's innumerable public investment needs, I'd like to use my time to focus on dispelling some concerns about the impact that income tax increases could have on our state's economy. These concerns generally fall into two categories. First, the effect that taxes have on incentives to work or start a business, and second, the impact that tax rates might have on migration into and out of the state. Both of these concerns posit that modestly increased tax burdens on the very rich could somehow upend the very foundations of our economy. That is a scary but misleading notion based on a misguided understanding of how opportunity is created. Businesses and jobs arise not because business owners choose a spot on the map and conjure opportunity, but because workers and consumers create demand for the goods and services that these businesses can provide. In other words, we get businesses and jobs when there is money to be made. And there is money to be made in Minnesota because we have a large, high-earning, high-employment state with many desirable qualities that make it a wonderful place to live, work, or run a business. The private sector, of course, plays an essential role in harvesting opportunity and transforming it into jobs as well as useful products and services. But creating opportunity is something we do as a society by ensuring healthy families, educated children, access to markets, and much more. Seen through this lens, it is obvious that greater public investment will not only create jobs and fulfill many of our state's unmet needs directly, but will also strengthen our economy by strengthening the base of workers and consumers that drive it. Business opportunity will flow from there. Warnings of economic calamity were similar in 2013, but they failed to come to fruition. In 5 years following the Dayton tax increases, Minnesota's personal income grew faster than any other state in the region, and the number of filers in every income category over $200,000 grew by around 50%. Likewise, the incomes of these groups grew both in total and as a share of state income. So while the negative impact on top earners is nowhere to be seen, revenues from the fourth tier funded full-year kindergarten, patched up budget holes, and ironically, gave Minnesota the surplus that is now fueling confidence in our state's long-term fiscal health. I'd also like to note that there's been some talk about the relationship between tax rates, total tax rates, and revenue growth. The notion being that we haven't seen the same, the revenues haven't grown as a share of income. That's actually a point to the opposite, which shows that even as we raise taxes, we grow more and more. We've heard many general references to Minnesota's competitiveness, but these examples are overly simplistic and often belie reality. The Tax Foundation's Business Climate Index, for example, ranks Minnesota very low, but it's worth pointing out that on average, the better a state ranks for the Tax Foundation's Business Climate Index, the worse they rank in terms of GDP per capita, median income, and poverty rates. If a state's business climate is determined by preferences of its most tax-averse business owners, then I suppose Minnesota might indeed rank low. But if it's measured by actual metrics of production, jobs, and wages, then we get a different answer. I would also like to speak more directly on the subject of tax flight, which is the notion that higher tax rates will drive Minnesotans to lower tax states. Tax flight is an interesting topic for an academic debate, but its relevance to questions of Minnesota's fiscal management has been overstated. Every year, tens of thousands of taxpayers and billions of dollars move into and out of every state in the country. Retirement is a big motivation, as is college, as are regional trends, such as the recent popularity of Colorado and Oregon as destinations for outdoor recreation and expensive pour-over coffee. This is the same answer that the Conservative Tax Foundation's Jared Walczak gave in a presentation to the Senate Tax Committee a few weeks ago. According to Minnesota's own professional demographers, the vast majority of our outbound migrants are college-aged and thus extremely unlikely
Minister
to be leading
Bernstein,
in a strong top tax rate.
If you could finish it up here.
Yes, sir.
Please.
More likely, they are leaving because out-of-pocket costs of state universities have increased as their funding has stagnated. The academic debate about migration is one thing, but allowing speculation about motivation behind migration for taxpayers representing an unknown fraction of 0.25% of our annual state income is something else entirely. It is, in my opinion, a serious misapplication of the research in this field. I would encourage you all to put the public investments needs of our state and the immediate needs of those who are struggling first. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Chair Marquardt, and I really enjoyed Mr. Bernstein's rewriting of history. It's very interesting. Please remember that the Dayton tax increases were extremely regressible, were half of the increases on the poor, the working poor. That was, and we were headed about a year ago, Mr. Chairman, to about, I was projecting a $7 to $10 billion shortfall. Because now money is raining from the sky from Washington, D.C., we're going to have a big surplus. So but I'll save that for my closing notes. But the Dayton tax increase, and of course, he had to get rid of some of them because they were so egregious. But let's remember that was supposed to hit the rich folks. It didn't do it. It hit a lot of the poor.
Any other questions for Mr. Bernstein? If not, we'll open this up. And before we open it up, Representative Herr, author of the bill, any comments you have on the testifiers, any that you, before you take questions, anything you'd like to add at this point?
Yes, Chair Marquardt, thank you for the opportunity to address a couple of these issues. I heard Ms. Cadoon, I can't remember her name, but she was speaking on small businesses and talking about the pass-through. And I want to be very clear that pass-through entities, which I don't know if the committee knows what this would mean, is those who use their individual social security number as their tax ID number, small as corporations, partnerships, LLCs, that may be set up in this way. And that impact is 26.9%. It is not a 90% number, as she had mentioned, that the pass-through impact is actually quite small. And I want to help us remember to keep this in perspective. This will impact 53,000 returns. That's out of 2.87 million returns. That's 1.8% of all of the returns. That the majority of this wage increase will be 42% on wages, or individual wages. There's an impact on capital gains, dividends and interest and retirement. And we understand that this is the top earners, that people who are at the bottom do not have capital gains. They do not have dividends and interest. And we are, and they're lucky if they have retirements that will push them over this limit. And so for us to remember, to keep in perspective, the percentage of people that this impacts, and even within the pass-through of the 26.9%, there's a huge difference between the pass-throughs in which somebody who is considered a small business, which is under 500 people, that group versus those who are at the higher end of that 500 making millions of dollars, that they will pay a larger portion of this versus those who are pass-through who are only making about $100,000. That for us to remember to keep that in perspective as we're talking about this. And also regarding the ability to recruit people and that this is an issue, that Minnesota continues to grow. The state demographer has in their projections that we are growing. St. Paul is at all-time high in their residents and increase in population. We will exceed our all-time level of resident population in the next few years. And so for us to use that as an excuse for why it is that people would be leaving our state is an erroneous assumption, that Minnesota has a lot to offer, and it is just not, somebody's not looking at their tax rate and saying, what is it that they're going to pay and decide if they're going to come here or not. And so I will answer any questions that anyone might have.
That sounds good. And before we go to questions and comments and so forth, just the revenue estimate for 2223 on House File 1335 is $1.649 billion, and in 2425, $1.442 billion dollars. And also want to mention letters of support from Jenny DeLuca, the Minnesota Budget Project, Ask Me Council 5, and SEIU for the record. So members, comments, questions, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I didn't expect to be fired right out of the gate and be in the lead of the pack, so I thank you for this opportunity. I only have a comment, and I'll be brief with it because I know there's going to be a lot of people that want to talk on this. Oops, I'm going to put my camera on too. Sorry. All right, I know you're actually
talking. Thank you, Representative Miller. That's always good when we can see
you. Get to see my bright, shiny face. Thank goodness for Zoom smoothing everything out. So, but anyway, I'm new on the tax committee, and it's been a great education, but that's what you do is you educate greatly, especially in a committee which is, you know, significantly different than some of the policy committees, just what we do. We are the root at what generates revenue for Minnesota. And the first comment I would make is in general, from my perspective, this isn't from tax committee, but it certainly is reinforced with that, is that we're a heavily taxed state. I think we're overtaxed. And if we talk about income tax today, but then you get into sales tax, you get into estate tax and death tax. And then one thing we always seem to forget are the fees that come in, or when we get to utilities, we have rate riders, which are basically taxes just coming in different. We create enough revenue to do the things. Now there's people that would disagree with me on that, and I understand that. But I've seen a theme this year in tax committee that's been educational to me. With whatever the tax bill is, and we have people for or against these tax bills, there's a theme, and it's kind of like, I think you should do this, but you hear it affecting the other guy, okay? So you need to do this for me because the other guy will take care of this. And I look at our committee makeup. I don't know anyone's individual incomes, but I would bargain to guess that most of us, if not all of us, are not in this income tax bracket. Maybe some of us are. I understand that. But it's really easy to talk about the other guy paying for these things that we want to do. And I caution us, because when we start saying what it does is it divides people. And it puts people into categories. Well, this is a rich person. They can afford it. This is this type of person. They're a business owner. They're not a business owner. And I'm telling you, it's across both parties that I'm seeing this, okay? When we do this, it divides people. And then what ends up happening when we divide is we don't necessarily do what's right for the state or the people of this state. We do what the people that have the power to do something do. And I've seen that happen in tax committee here. Are we going to have enough votes to pass this? We're going to have enough votes to probably pass this fifth tier if it comes to the House floor. But is it going to be in the Senate? But if the Senate was a different majority, would it be different? Folks, I just hope that in general, and I'm going to wrap it up here, Mr. Chair, because I know I'm a little bit off topic of this actual bill. I'm going to wrap it up.
I just hope
that the decisions that we make in tax committee are truly for the betterment of Minnesota and not necessarily the betterment of Minnesota because someone else is going to have to carry that burden. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Miller. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, and thank you, Representative Miller, for your comment. I just wanted to touch briefly on that. So I'm not thinking about the other guy who's going to pay for this because my family is the other guy. So my husband is an executive at an investment firm. He does investment risk analysis, manages billions of dollars. That's what he does. And we didn't come from money. We were refugees who grew up in poverty. And so when I think about why this is important, this is why I'm carrying this bill, is because I understand that those of us who are doing better, we need to give everybody else the same opportunity. And so in the circles that we are a part of, they are also investment people who work in the investments industry who are in this income bracket. And never one time did any one of these individuals tell us they would move out of state because we'd be increasing their taxes. Never one time did they tell us that they looked at that when they were deciding which state they were going to live in. Never one time did they say that they didn't want to participate in when they're doing well to help those who aren't doing well. And I get it, not everybody feels that same way. And I'm not saying everybody does, but I'm just sharing with you that as you spoke to the other guy paying for this, I'm letting you know that we are around a circle of the other guys, and that's the feedback we have received. And, you know, and I asked my husband explicitly before this hearing if I could use his example. And I want to be very clear that, like, you know, it's not an easy thing to want to tell people that you are the people who've benefited during this time. Like, that's not something I'm proud of, but I also know that I'm not ashamed of the successes that we've made and that we will pay what we need to in order to help others. And I also want to be very clear that those in this industry understand that the market is very different than the economy, and those who benefited from market increases is enormous. In our own portfolio, we yielded a return of 35% over the rolling 12 months. That's a 13% increase from year over year 2020. That is, we have benefited immensely from this, and that when people are struggling to have their housing and to have food and to have their education, and kids who can't, you know, we can't build across that digital divide for kids, like we know we've done well, and not only about our income and our jobs, but the wealth that we continue to build, which is why this bill is so important, because I want to give everybody else the opportunities that I had in this amazing country that we live in.
Mr. Chair, if I could just have just a really fast response.
You bet. Representative Miller.
And Representative Herr, I'm very thankful for how your family has been blessed and the success of that. You have opportunities to contribute more. There are plenty of nonprofits that you can contribute to as much money as you want. What I take exception to is we sort of blithely make these very important decisions. We have to make tough decisions. I appreciate that. But we make these broad decisions that affect a lot of people. We say, you should be paying this, and you should be paying that, and you shouldn't be paying this. Representative Herr, I'm thankful that you're in a position that you are financially stable enough that you can help other people. You can do that without passing this tax bill.
I also want to mention AFL-CIO also has a letter of support. So thank you, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not going to go down a path of trying to convince anyone else of their convictions on which is the right path to go, but I want to correct some of the information that's been presented, and particularly this idea that it's the corporations that are making all this money. As you heard testifiers previously talk about, 90% of the small businesses in Minnesota are pass-through entities. And what a lot of people don't maybe reflect on or try to consider or parse out, that there are two income streams in a business. One, the owner of the business is an employee just like anyone else and gets a paycheck in circumstances where the business is finally starting to grow and they can afford to pay the owner a paycheck. Businesses don't operate just simply on the idea that whatever is left over is mine. Capital is an important aspect of growing a business. And so the business is entitled to a profit, as is the officers of that company or the employees. In a C Corp, every corporate officer is paid a salary and has benefits. And it's really should be no different in a small organization, in an LLC or a sub S or whatever, however it's organized. But we've heard that 90% of our small businesses, 90% of business in Minnesota are pass-through entities. So the idea that, you know, you're combining these two pools of money automatically makes small business owners in this group, which would be subject to higher taxation oftentimes. And then business isn't for certain. I mean, you have good years and you have bad years, Mr. Chair. Some years are a home run, and the next time you turn around and you're having to go back to that capital you made previously to keep things afloat because suddenly the economy changes or market changes. So the last point I'd like to make, and Mr. Haveman succinctly described it, is, you know, here in Minnesota, if we want to be growing business, want to create jobs, create competitive environments, oftentimes business has to recruit top talent. And I remember reading a story a couple of years ago how one of the very famous basketball stars was trying to decide whether he was going to take a position or an offer in New York versus Florida. And the New York position paid a much higher salary than the Florida. But the after-tax net amount is a decision maker. And clearly with regard to Minnesota, if we want to propel our tax brackets into being New York and being California, our businesses are going to face an incredible challenge in terms of recruiting top talent to grow our companies and to grow our businesses and create jobs. And the last point I'd like to make, when we talk about flight, yes, there's people that move, yes, there's people that retire, But nonetheless, when businesses do move, you're talking about marginally taking more. But when a business does move, you're not getting that extra 2% that's being proposed. You're losing it all. You're losing all of the income from that individual. That has quite an offsetting factor. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to belabor the point anymore, but I feel like I'm always barking at the moon when it comes to making sure that we have a competitive business climate and a competitive business environment. And this is just frustrating to hear these types of proposals, and I'll end it there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. Before I move to Representative Herr, I've got some members who are saying that things are cutting out. They're not hearing real well. Is a lot of members having problems right now? Well, we'll continue. And I know yesterday in the state office building, there were some internet problems, I believe. Even though I wasn't here yesterday, I am today, but on my end, it seems to be okay. But all right, so Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, and thank you, Representative Hertaus, for your questions. And I just want to be very clear. You mentioned that we said that corporations were paying this, and I just want to be very clear. I don't think one time in any of the testimonies I heard us saying that corporations are the ones bearing the brunt of this particular tax. I want to be very clear that small businesses who are pass-throughs are very different than corporations, and that though there are 90% of our small businesses are set up as pass-throughs, only 26.9% of them will be impacted by this particular tax itself. I also want to be very clear about the fact that according to the U.S. Small Business Administration, that the median income for an individual self-employed and they're incorporated is $50,000. Those people will not be impacted by this. And so the vast majority of people who are set up as pass-throughs will not be impacted by this particular bill. I also want to be really careful about how we talk about what we're talking about here. I hear a lot of people talking about income, but they're not distinguishing between, and we're talking about deductibles. Individual deductibles is different than small businesses or businesses in their deductible. They can deduct all expenses. When we look at somebody's income, it's very different than somebody's gross revenues. That gross revenues is not what is being taxed. It is taxable. It's what is, after expenses have been taken out, that is what is taxable. That when we talk about individual, that there's so many things that we're all conflating into one single thing, that corporations are, the way they're set up is very different than pass-through entities that are set up. And so I just want to be us to be really thoughtful about when we're putting all these numbers out there and we're speaking about all these different things, that we're not talking about the same things. And so when I talk about a small business who maybe is making gross revenues of, $700,000, that's not their taxable. That's not what is taxable. They have cost of goods sold, they have expenses, they have deductibles, and that even oftentimes, and I'm from a family of small business owners, that even oftentimes when it looks like they have $1 million in gross revenues, that they have enough deductibles that show that the business broke even. And so I just want us to be really thoughtful about when we talk about all of these different terms, that they don't mean the same things within for somebody who is impacted with their wages as a small business, a corporation versus a pass-through. And those who are benefiting from this and those who are going to be impacted by this. And I just want us to be really thoughtful and careful about the terms that we choose to use around this. And when we're talking about small business, are we talking about a mom and pop shop that has three employees? Are we talking about a 450 people organization making millions and millions of dollars? Like, to me, that's the same term. And the different cities and municipalities define small businesses different. So if we're going to be talking about these things, I would just like to, in order to be able to respond appropriately, to understand the terms people are using and how they're defining those terms, because that'll allow us to have better engagement in this conversation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that I've been a business owner for more than 48 years. I've owned multiple companies. I don't need an education on how business operates. Thank you.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank Representative Herr for bringing this bill forward. And so, painting a picture so well of what we're facing in the state, COVID did impact everybody differently, and we have to look at all of our systems when it comes to looking at that and trying to address those needs. But I know some folks have mentioned we're a high-tech state. We may disagree on that, but what we would probably agree on is that we're a high-service state, and those services pay for things like our education system and things that bring Fortune 500 companies here to stay. So there's a lot of things that we offer that make people want to stay here, and it's usually not our weather. So it's important that we invest in those things. And when we're talking about this bill, and I'm just repeating what Representative Purr so eloquently said, is that she was trying to make folks see that the folks she works with and folks in the circle that her husband works with have been saying they want to make those investments. They see the need to make those investments. They see the results and the outcome of those investments. And what we're talking about in this bill is a 2.6% increase on just income over $500,000. That's after deductibles. That's net income, not gross. And only in that portion that's over that, affecting only 53,000 income tax filers. Out of, I believe Representative Hur said, 2.87 million returns. And I would hazard a guess, because I have people in my family that are going to be hit by this too, who would say a lot of the same things that Representative Hur's friends say. It's worth it. It's worth it to have a stable education system. It's worth it to have stable housing for folks to put food on their table, because those folks that we're talking about that don't have all those deductibles and the income coming in, those are the ones that spend their money in your businesses. They're your customers, and you want them to have the income and the stability so that they can be productive members in society. You know, that's what government does. It does collectively what people can't individually do by themselves. And I always hear that thought of, well, you've made more, so there's other ways you can give. Part of giving is being part of a collective society as well. So just thank you, Representative Fair, for bringing forward this bill.
Thank you. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just want to make a comment. Minnesota, we want to attract top talent, but more importantly, we want to grow our own talent. And so we need to make those investments from the tax revenue we accumulate to invest in our education and our training of workers in Minnesota. Companies come to Minnesota because we have really high quality workforce, and I think that's an important point. And also, I want to thank Mr. Bernstein for making his comments. Minnesota, if you look at all of our effective tax rates and compare us to other states, and you include other fees, we are in the middle of other states in terms of our effective tax rate and fees. So we are not, I would not classify us as a high tax state if you look at those two indicators. I just also want to thank Representative Hur for bringing this forward and for Chair Marquardt for hearing this bill.
Thank you. Chair Moran.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. And I would be really short, but I just wanted to make a comment and to say to Representative Hur, first, thank you for bringing this bill forward. Thank you for educating us. For those, for the public, for those who are hearing this, we all need to be educated and informed around the terms that we are using. And also, it's important that folks across the state of Minnesota are really clear about who and whom is going to be impacted by this bill that you're bringing forward. 53,000 people impacted out of 2.8 returns that's filed. And I think more importantly, I am really a person who like to look to those who have been impacted and say, what do you think? I think this is a public meeting. Have we heard from any of those who's been going to be impacted by this? You know, I don't think we have to defend people who are making an abundance of money through a pandemic and not wanting to pay their fair share. I don't think that's for us to be making that defense for them who have like really benefited through, and it's great that people are benefiting from it. But again, you know, we just cannot throw terms and language out so that the little small mom and pop businesses or those who have been really hurt by this pandemic is going to think or believe that we're trying to hurt them when we are not. This is, we as Democrats are really working to make sure that we are supporting those small businesses across the state of Minnesota. So again, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for educating me. Thank you for educating so many of us who don't know how these terms have been often used to misrepresent those big corporations.
Thank you very much. Members, other comments or questions for the author? Okay, so I thank you for the discussion today. I've got a couple comments, and then what I'd like to do is go to Chair Davids as the lead, and then Representative Herr to finish things off. So again, thank you for the discussion today. I think this is good. Thank you, Representative Herr, for bringing this forward. And you know, the economic downturn that we've seen during COVID-19 is unlike any type of recession we've seen before. And I know Representative Herr alluded to this. We're typically in recessions in the past, you know, the stock markets have been poor, and it usually decreases income inequity, actually brings that a little closer together. But this COVID-19 economic downturn has gone just the opposite direction. It has actually increased the disparity in the inequity between higher income and lower income, primarily because one of the reasons the stock markets have stayed strong, even though they saw about the third week in March, they were down about 34%, which was the bottom, but they rebounded by August and now are stronger than that. And so it's actually increased the disparity that we have out there. And you know, you look at some of the data, and we know that 61% of the top quarter of income earners had a job where they could work remotely from home, 61%. And yet only 9% of those in the bottom one quarter of income, only 9% had a job that they could work remotely from home. And those are the ones that got hit the hardest. We know 57% of those receiving unemployment insurance in Minnesota, the bottom 40% of our income levels. And so we really need to address that. And while we are one of the least regressive states in the nation, we still are slightly regressive. And according to the Minnesota Incident Report, the top 1% of income still has an effective tax rate lower than the average taxpayer in the state. And finally, I would say that, you know, only about $260 million of our budget surplus is really structural, kind of ongoing. It isn't, you know, the $1.6 billion. And so we really need to have to look into the future. And a lot of the concerns we have now dealing with education and not getting enough kids in early learning childhood or enough child care and affordable child care or caretakers taking care of those with disabilities, those were problems before the pandemic. And they continue to be problems that are going to take ongoing, long-term resources to really solve that. And if we're going to make the state not only recover from COVID-19, but make the state and our families, our workers, our small businesses, our students, senior citizens stronger in the end, we got to look into ongoing revenue into the future. So again, thank you, Representative Herr, for bringing this bill forward. Thanks for the debate today. Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for hearing the bill today. As one member said, we were given an education, and I think the people in Minnesota were given quite an education on what not to do. And for other members that bring bills forward, every time after a member makes a comment, we don't need to be lectured or corrected. That's not in fact, we don't do that. But Mr. Chairman, I know that I've heard bills in the past as tax chairman that I knew were going nowhere, that didn't have a chance. And that's kind of what category this bill falls into. We know it's not going anywhere. We have billions and billions of dollars in surplus. There is no, it's unconscionable to think about any tax increases with the money that is raining down on our heads from Washington. Our debt have to be there. So I would just say, you know, I wish we could do the PPP loans, I wish we could tax students on unemployment. But here we talk about getting an education, being lectured on how guys like me that would be affected by this tax, we should want to pay more. Mr. Chairman, I don't want to pay more. I pay plenty. And to those in the I want to pay more category, the Department of Revenue has an area where if you want to pay more state income taxes, you can. The IRS does also. If you want to pay more, knock yourself out. Go ahead and pay more. Pay all the taxes you want. I'm not even talking about giving to charity. I like to give to charity. But if you think you're not paying enough to the government, pay more. We don't need bills like this. If you want to pay more, pay more. I mean, some of the comments, the arrogance of some of the comments that government knows so much better what to do with other people's money is just stunning to me. But as I said, this bill is going absolutely nowhere. So, but I thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing the bill. I can give you a list of bills I heard as the longest serving tax chairman in history. They were going nowhere, but there's a purpose to hear them, even though they are not going anywhere. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. The author of the bill, Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, and thank you for the opportunity to come in front of committee. I want to first just address the fact that I'm a little bit dumbfounded at the anger that I'm hearing from individuals feeling like they're being lectured. If we're having dialogue to ask for clarification of words so that we're having the same conversation, that's not lecturing. That if we're making statements about things that are not factually always clear and asking for clarification, that is not lecturing. And the fact that coming from me is lecturing, but yet I heard a number of members lecturing me about what it is that I don't know about this bill. And yet never one time did I feel like somebody was lecturing me. I understood that as the discourse, and that we don't always have to agree, but we do not have to be condescending and diminishing somebody's perspective by saying they're lecturing versus when you're the individual lecturing, you don't believe that's lecturing. And so I just want to be very clear. I don't know if it was another man speaking, if they would have been told they were lecturing others. And so I just want to be really clear that I never felt lectured, even though if I were a man, I probably would have said I was being lectured too. So I just want to be really clear about that point. It is not lecturing. This is discourse. We don't have to agree. It's not lecturing. It's disagreeing. So Mr. Chair, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to come in front of you. This is a good bill. It is a sound approach to investment and long-term success without harming short-term ability to grow our economy and create jobs. As noted by the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, this type of tax makes our tax system fair by raising revenue from people who have reaped the gains of raising inequality. It reduces the inequalities embedded in our tax system. Minnesotans take care of one another. Me putting money into a separate account does not impact Minnesotans as much as the incremental changes that somebody has to pay into this in order for us to make a greater pool of funds so that we can do greater good with that. That is the best way for us to go about this. And we as Minnesotans know that we take care of one another. We know when we are doing well, it is our responsibility to care for others who are not doing well. That this is because we never know when it is going to be our turn. And I don't want to wait until it is my turn to ask for somebody then to step up to help me out too, because I was willing to help before. So when we will be the ones, we don't know when we're going to be the ones asking for help and for that support, because that is who we are as Minnesotans. And as I reflect on this past year, I know how hard it has been for all Minnesotans. We've experienced loss. We've sacrificed. We've made choices because protecting each other was more important than anything else. Despite how hard it has been, though, I know that I fared better than most Minnesotans. As I stated earlier already, right? I don't know if all of you know this. You probably don't because I didn't make this public, but my husband was unemployed during this time. But you know what? It didn't impact us the same way other Minnesotans were impacted. We had the money and savings to hold us over until he found another job. So, and as I mentioned earlier, We had investments that we could live on. We have wealth that we had been generating. We had homes that we could be in. We did much better than everyone else. That's because we were invested in the markets, which continued to do well when the economy wasn't doing well. This example, my story, it's not a story of chance, or that my husband and I worked harder than anyone else, or we were more deserving of anything than anybody else. As refugees to this country, there were times our families depended on public assistance. Our parents had access to financing tools to secure housing. We received support from food shelves. We had access to healthcare. We benefited from public education that was funded. We went to public universities where we received grants in order to complete our college education. I am a firm believer that increasing revenue so that we can continue to invest in all of these resources is key to not just supporting Minnesotans out of this pandemic, but a Minnesota that gives everyone the opportunity to thrive anytime. So I ask for your support and renew my motion to lay over House File 1335 for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Herr renews her motion to lay over House File 1335 for possible inclusion into the House Tax Omnibus Bill. Thank you, Representative Herr, for bringing this forward. Thank you, members, for the discussion. Tomorrow, we will come in at our regular time and hear two bills. the global intangible low tax income and worldwide reporting bills. And then we will come, we will recess and come back at 6 o'clock to hear some bills. And then on Thursday, we will hear a bill on unrealized gain. So we do have one night meeting that will be tomorrow night starting at 6 o'clock at this time. So members, with that, thank you. We are adjourned.